Do it.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Here we are. So I'm just going to admit it. I feel like an asshole because my good friend James Miller here, my now good friend, even though I've just met him tonight, followed me on Twitter from his podcast called Coolest Humans. And I was like, oh, dude, I'd love to be on your show. I think I'm a pretty cool human. And he was like, yeah, man, we'll have to set it up sometime. I never heard anything. And then my other now good friend, Adam Henson here, was like, hey, I'm coming to Ohio, guys. Let's get a meetup going. So met you guys from having Hunter Motz on the podcast, came out to the little community. Now we're all at my house after a nice evening at World of Beer. And turns out James is the host of the show. That's this cool show that talks to the coolest humans. I have a published author here on my right, Adam Henson, spelled the Danish way. What's up, guys?
S-E-N. Hey, just delighted to be here, man.
Yeah, you're on my my blue couch, which is hard to get comfortable on.
No, it's very comfortable.
It's weird.
The arms are high.
Yeah, it's for rich people, for sure. It's like the rich rich people style furniture where it's hard to get through doors. I have a couch. I'm probably going to get rid of this stuff and put the couch right here, maybe move that over there and put the couch here.
I like it. It's comfortable. Thank you. You're a very gracious host.
Thanks, man. I'm happy that it worked out. So James had this idea of us recording at World of Beer. And due to my past experiences with first time meeting folk on the internet, I'm like, you know what? A group of six people getting together might be talking over each other. And I poo-pooed the idea like a douche. And here we are. We're recording a podcast now.
Well, thanks for finally coming around, man.
Yeah, well, it wasn't finally coming around. I've been waiting on you to schedule a date, and here we are.
Yeah, I'm a lousy host, but here we are. You're hosting at your house. I appreciate
yeah.
it. And maybe we'll share the audio, or I'll have you on.
Oh, we'll definitely share it, man. We can, and I can come on, too. I feel like I'm a cool human. But what did you guys think about tonight? So, you know, Adam sent this he put this post in the Mixed Mental Arts Facebook group that he was coming to town, let's get together, and was more than happy to take the bull by the horns and kind of say, let's go here. And James, like, do we have a reservation there? And I was like, what is this guy talking about? Number one, he wants to record a podcast, a reservation at World of Beer. And he was like,
I'm a little hoity-toity.
He's like, and I didn't even, because I thought you were Jeremy, and I'm like, okay, why is this Columbus guy saying this? And it's like, oh, that's the guy from New Philly. Of course. Of course he didn't know, but I mean, so what are your guys' thoughts from tonight, man? So, do you guys want to kind of introduce yourselves and talk about stuff?
I'm James Miller, as our gracious host has already pointed out. I made the trek down the highway 2 hours to hang out with these fellas and try some beers. There's a couple other guys. They didn't come back to do the podcast, but good guys. Had a lot of good conversation. Adam was pretty much our host for the evening. He was directing conversation and asking good questions, and I, in my typical fashion, hung back and listened.
Yeah.
Because I'm a podcast host. I'm not a podcast guest. And
you are tonight.
I am tonight, and I actually love it. But it was a good night. I'm glad I came. I had opportunity not to come, but I actually made my work schedule work and came down here and did this.
Thanks, Rob Wolf. If it wasn't for Rob Wolf, James wouldn't be here today.
That's right. Thank you, Rob Wolf, and the Paleo Solution. it solved many problems for us tonight. It got me down here to Columbus to drink beer and talk to these guys. And Drew introduced me to mead tonight that he made. I'd never had mead before. It was awesome. And the guy's got a farm in his backyard in the middle of town.
Yeah.
This is fucking ridiculous.
Thanks, man.
Over to you, Adam.
Such a cool human. Adam's an author.
I am. I'm Adam Henson, and I came in from New Jersey. I'm here in town. We're meeting with some clients tomorrow to kick off a project that we'll be wrapping up next week in our Orlando office. I'm an innovation dude. I got very lucky to figure out a long time ago that you could do innovation for a living. And I thought when I heard that was a pretty good idea. So I've been at it now for a few decades.
It kind of blew my mind because you said something and I was like, what is he getting at? It sounded so fancy. And I'm like, he's going to have to dumb it down for me. And then can you share that example? We don't, you don't have to share it, but you said like something that you'd contributed to.
Well, that was before me. But
Let's just pretend like it was you.
The oatmeal one?
Yeah.
So my company Ideas to Go. So it's this idea that so large companies have an ongoing need to come out with new products or new services if they're in the service business. But so the longer ago a new product came out, the more apt we are to be able to share it. Because then companies just go, yeah, okay, that's fine. That was long ago. Meaning that we can't share stuff that's more recent because we sign all kinds of master service agreements.
Yeah. There's some proprietary shit you can't share. Yeah.
So I know stuff that is going to be, it's in the hopper. Like I always have a pretty good idea what's going to be coming out.
Adam could predict the future.
Coming out in the next 2 or 3 years. I have a pretty good idea. So go back 25 plus years ago, Quaker came to us, this is before I worked for Ideas to Go, and said, hey, we have this issue. If kids aren't eating oatmeal by age 4, they're not going to eat oatmeal. So can you help us with that? We want to come up with oatmeal ideas that are more engaging, more interactive, and fun for kids. So we said, great, we can do that. So we brought in moms from our creative consumer panel. We got the input from their kids and everything. And one of our creative consumers said, I've got an idea. It's an oatmeal now that has dinosaur eggs in it, and you pour hot water on it, and the dinosaur egg shells just kind of melt away, and there are dinosaurs in there. And for those of you who have had this now, Quaker dinosaur eggs oatmeal for little kids. And some of the people in the group had said, yeah, I actually had that as a little kid. So that's just one example of the kinds of things that we do.
It's pretty fascinating, man. And then you wrote a book as well.
Yeah. So I started noticing, and as a group, we started noticing a few years ago that a lot of the things that was coming out from behavioral science, some of the Daniel Kahneman, Amos Tversky stuff, System 1, System 2 thinking, a lot of talk about cognitive biases. We saw overlap in our work, particularly things like negativity bias. Like it's always easier when new ideas come up to go straight to what isn't working in them. That's just automatic. That's reflexive.
Is that because of people's resistance to change?
It's because it served our ancestors well. If for our ancestors, if they had a bias that all novelty is threat, first and foremost, they are more likely to survive.
Yeah.
If there's a rustling in the bushes, instead of processing that as opportunity, you process that as threat, and then place as much distance between you and that rustling in the bushes as possible, then you got to live another day.
Yeah.
The curious and inquisitive who went to that rustling in the bushes, the moment they decide to do that, their genetic fate took a pretty big hit, or their odds of sticking around long enough to pass on their DNA just kind of went right. Yeah. Right. So we're the descendants of the savants of risk aversion. And so we come by that very honestly. So that's just one example, negativity bias. It's bad is stronger than good in our cognition. We fear loss much more than we appreciate gain.
Yeah.
So that's just one example. And so there are very specific things you can do to mitigate that. And so as long as you just bring a little bit of awareness to it, you have some simple tools, you can start mowing down some of these cognitive biases that are really hurting innovation. And so if you do it particularly in a group, then you can keep each other honest. You can have some fun with it. Hopefully you bring some humility to it, a little bit of sense of humor. The good thing about it is we all have these cognitive biases. We can't point fingers at anyone because all of us have them.
Yeah, they're ingrained.
Yeah. And Daniel Kahneman says none of us are going to be able to overcome these entirely. And so he's, you know.
And who is Daniel Kahneman?
So he's the Nobel laureate who did a lot of the great work along with his buddy Amos Tversky, who first they started just kind of like knocking down some of the pillars of thought that humans are rational actors.
Yeah.
And they said, we really aren't.
Yeah.
And so let's get honest about that.
Yeah. It's interesting. Before I heard Hunter on JRE, I like what this election kind of turned me onto that, because I thought I saw Scott Adams on Reason TV and he was saying, I think Trump's going to win because he's a master persuader and he just gets it. And I was like, you know, that's super interesting, but I just don't see that happening. And then I started reading his blog and he has this whole persuasion reading list. And that kind of actually coincided too, because a few years ago I started studying the Severn liberal arts and kind of trying to apply like the Trivium method, which is grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And now I'm on rhetoric, and it's like, cause each year it pretty much takes to really kind of digest. And even then I still suck at grammar, but I'm trying to get better. But I mean, persuasion is such a powerful form of rhetoric, being in sales for, you know, 10 years and being a good networker, it made sense. And then he's like, humans aren't rational, facts don't matter. And then I was listening to my friend Brett on School Sucks podcast, and he was referencing Jonathan Haidt quite a bit, or Haidt, or Haidt, I forget how you say his name. Yeah. And then he was talking about, then he put some excerpts of Jonathan Haidt on Tom Woods, from when he was on Tom Woods, and he's talking about, so if you're going to persuade somebody, you know, there's the rider and the elephant, and there's, who are you going to try to persuade? Are you going to try to persuade the rider, or are you going to try to persuade the elephant? And it was like, okay, Jonathan Haidt wasn't on Scott Adams' reading list, so then I dove into him, and then I saw Hunter on JRE, and he started talking about it, then I got Hunter on, and now I've got his reading list. It's been an interesting thing for me, because it's like, I've been in these different schools of thought that are connecting.
Yeah.
And they're independently connecting through different things. And I think it's interesting, because when you accept the fact that I'm not a rational human being, I can do everything I can to be emotionally intelligent and try to function. But even then, I think what, you know, just even talk, like even this year, like you guys saw my farm and everything, but even like, here I am, like kind of a ground zero for this micro entrepreneurship enterprise, this part-time business that I had incubating, and now I'm trying to go full-time. And my number one motivation, and something that I'm trying to use as my number one motivation, is my fear of having to go back and get a job. And it's like, I don't want to do that, man. I don't. So it's a big motivator. So it's like, you know, I mean, you guys can see, like, I'm in this process of, like, I just cleaned my whole house. I'm in this process of getting stuff clean and getting organized. And it's like, you know, stepping up the time management game and figuring out, because when you work for yourself, it's easy to want to put in those hours, but that's a great way to burn yourself out. And so, like, I'm trying to master and understand things, because it's interesting, because, you know, Hunter doesn't have the Charles Duhigg book of The Power of Habit. And it's like, there's different books that are in each reading list, and neither of them had like the, have you guys read like the Theory of Scientific Revolutions or
Kuhn?
Yeah. Thomas Kuhn.
Oh, absolutely.
Kuhn.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, I put that in the Facebook group, like when the whole fucking vaccine debate was going on, I'm like, man, both sides just drive me nuts. Like both sides, because they're not like, I don't get vaccines. But that's just because I have this distrust of the medical industry. But it's like, you know, when you study, you know, when you read Kuhn's book and you're like, study the history of science, and then you come back to the humans aren't rational, or you look at the low fat diet debate, which you just had Rob Wolf on today, James.
Yes.
And then you look at Ansel Keys sold the low fat diet because he was charismatic, not because of science. And that's a fact of when you take into relation of persuasion, and you take into this relation of the way humans operate, we're just not rational humans. And you were talking there, so I just decided to spew all that information.
Yeah,
guys.
Well, so given that, the best you can kind of hope to do is to have, I love your cats.
They do this
these
all
guys
the time.
Are great. They're so much fun.
Yeah, these cats—they're disruptors.
No,
of
they're great.
Podcast. They're awesome. They're my buddies.
So the way forward then is what? And I think what it is a lot of what mixed mental arts is trying to do, and that is to get multiple inputs, the odds that any one source is going to have the stranglehold on reality is, of course, is negligible, but also that any one source is going to be a complete clinker and have nothing to contribute is probably equally off, right? And so the question to ask, I think, is what can some of these sources that seem to have some value, some demonstrable value, what can they put into the mix that seems helpful? And then how do you then slot it up against some of these other things that also seem to be working well? And how can it just add to it? And so I think for me, what I find interesting about mixed mental arts is just you're starting to just assemble kind of now this body of inputs to help you think better. I really like that you brought up the Charles Duhigg, you know, the power of habits, the notion of keystone habits and the leverage that can come from that.
That book is so fascinating.
Isn't it great?
Especially the dude who worked for Target who, man, have you read the book, James?
I have not.
Okay, so he worked for Target and he could tell based on purchases because they were tracking purchases for customers and they could tell based on their purchases on when a woman was going to become pregnant.
Yeah.
So then they'd send coupons saying, oh, you're pregnant, get this. And so they sent it to this guy's 16-year-old daughter. And the guy came into the store super pissed off, raised hell, and then it rolled up to this guy and he goes, well, I'll have to check that because he's like a, you know, just a math guy. And he was like, I'm going to have to check like the algorithm or something like that he developed. And then he said, you know, I took a look and it looked good. Like, but, you know, we'll definitely put an age filter on. And so 2 weeks later, the guy comes in and he says, I'm so sorry. My daughter's pregnant.
Yeah.
Like you can try, like humans are so predictable based on buying habits and stuff like that, that it's not, we don't even, I can't even fully comprehend. Like, it's like you can, and it's all these algorithms, even like Facebook, like I actually love it. Like I love when ad block's not working and I'm like looking and I'm like, you know, I have been looking for that, but now it's like, it's so out in the open because I do such little shopping. And so it's like, I already have, like how many times do I have to look at seed deals and Jang Cedars and shit like that, or Wendell Berry books from Amazon? Like it's really niche. Like
once they have you for Wendell Berry, they have a pretty good sense.
Yeah, man.
What you're about.
Gene Logsdon and Wendell Berry gives everything away. I think it's fascinating, man. I mean, the Duhigg book, and then you were saying something. I interrupted you. Sorry.
But just this idea of when you get more people involved there. So, you know, Hunter obviously is about as well read as we could hope for a person to be. And then we get other people come in and they also then bring their resources and their, you know, their, and they add to the conversation.
Yeah.
And so what I like is what Ed Hess, who is one of my favorite authors, and I've tried to plug his last book, which I really love, which is called Humility is the New Smart.
Yeah.
Which I just think is absolutely brilliant.
Well, it makes sense. Yeah.
Right.
Because just like Rob Wolf was just saying on Rogan, like the last time he was on there is, man, you know, the more I learned, he asked him something about diet and Rob was like, you know, man, I just don't even know anymore. He's like, it's like the more you learn about something, like even like you're a niche field of what's coming out. And I'm sure if I knew a little bit, or if I was doing my own independent research and I asked you a question, you'd be like, possibly. But I mean,
the right way to proceed and the error that too many experts commit is they won't admit to the limits of their expertise.
Oh yeah.
Right? But what Ed Hess says that I like so much is the reason why it's good to have varied perspectives in a group is because you want to have non-overlapping pools of confirmation bias.
Yeah.
So if we're all too much alike,
We just have an echo chamber.
Our confirmation bias is all going to be very similar. And then...
Which is the biggest problem with our political...
Yeah.
Our political tensions now.
And our media.
Yeah, and our media.
Well, and our media, yeah. But then what's that, metaphorically, what's that like? That's like, I like pointing out every now and again to our clients when they want to bring in only the marketing team.
My third cat won't shut up. I'm really sorry, guys.
When our clients only want to bring in like just the marketing team, I'll say, no, we really want a cross-functional team.
Yeah.
And if they persist in that, I'll say, if I know them well enough, or if I feel I can get away with it, I'll say, well, you know, look at this. We figured out as a species long before the scientific revolution that incest wasn't a particularly great genetic strategy.
Yeah.
And so why wouldn't that logic apply to ideas?
Yeah.
And there's something to be said for hybrid vigor.
So idea sex, but not idea incest.
No, not idea incest. Idea sex, not idea incest. Exactly. We don't want ideas with three arms. We don't want hemophiliac ideas. To all the hemophiliacs in your audience, Drew, my apologies.
And I don't know of any of them.
I hope you're getting great care.
And if they get offended, then they obviously don't listen
I'm
to my
sorry.
Show that
I'm
much.
I'm so sorry.
Everybody's open to take offense on this show.
And to the people with three arms as well, again, our heart goes to you. But no, there's some real power to... it's this idea, if you and I agree on everything, one of us really is redundant. And I don't know about you guys, but I love having a group of friends that I'm not always going to agree with.
Yeah.
Well, dude, I don't want an echo chamber.
Yeah.
No.
That's why I got out of church, because that was all my friends and we all believe the same thing. It was so boring.
Yeah.
Like, I want people that believe in many different things and we can still have other things in common.
Yeah.
The fact that we have different beliefs doesn't mean we can't hang out and have a good time. It's more fun to disagree respectfully than to agree.
I agree.
Have the same conversation over and over again.
Absolutely. It's good to have a conversation. Like I mean, even like Hunter and I were talking when I had him on, and he's like, you know, disbanding government and having this, and like, man, I'm pretty much like, I've come to the conclusion that I don't want any government to regulate me. But I definitely know there's people that want that for their life and in their life. And so it's like you come to this, like, I see where he's coming from, but I also see where I'm coming from. And I'm like, they just get in my way. Like, it's like they don't.
We need some government.
Yeah, I think city states work. I think the smaller you go, the better it is. But you were talking today when we were at World of Beer, and it was like, you know, you're like going on about what's going on here. You show this little bell graph. I'm like, man, it's 320 million people. Like, how can you, number one, to be a person that says, I want to be the commander in chief of 320 million people. There's something wrong with you.
That ought to be disqualifying right there.
Well, yeah. I mean, and then you get,
that was my point, is the fact that you want the job is strike one.
Yeah.
What's the next two strikes?
Well, and until we come up with something else, someone does have to throw his or her hat into
the system we have into
that ring.
Oh yeah.
And so until we figure out what else that is, or
the system runs
runs its course, and we say, you know what? Hey, it was a great run. Let's break up into, you know, six different countries, or, you know, whatever. I mean, I think, you know, at some point we probably ought to be open to that. I mean, there's nothing chiseled in stone. Well, no, actually, there's stuff chiseled in stone, I guess. Oh, I'm sorry. There's actually a place called Washington, D.C., where a lot of this is actually chiseled in stone.
The District of Columbia.
It's weird. But then on the other side of that, in a nation of 320 million people, we're up to 325. It's got to be something wherever we are now. But how, the system's got to be pretty weird for us to end up with the perverse results that we do for those candidates then.
Yeah.
And it's just, it just boggles the mind.
Yeah, definitely.
That we can't get better candidates.
Well, I mean, the people that would be better candidates want nothing to do with it.
Yeah, because it's, yeah.
I mean,
for these reasons.
How do you think, like, you are an innovation, like, that is your business. Do you think you could make better? Do you think you could have a greater impact on society with business or by you becoming a politician?
I'm temperamentally and any other number of ways, I'm just not suited to that. I mean, I don't do well politically in large business organizations.
Yeah.
I mean, I voted with my feet.
Yeah.
I used to, my job before Ideas Ago was as innovation director in a large
company, right?
Company. And it was great. It was a fantastic experience. And I really made some great friendships there and everything. But I became increasingly unimpressed with my ability to create the results that I felt needed to be created within that kind of organization.
That kind of environment, that kind of bureaucratic.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I think I was hired because I had a track record of getting, of making really cool stuff happen.
Great. Getting shit done.
Yeah. And when I was only able to do so much, I just thought, well, okay, I've done kind of what I can.
Yeah.
So I would thought on the political side, like in the military, we have things like DARPA and Skunk Works and all these places where we put the greatest thinkers and we give them money and get out of the way and tell them develop, and they come up with some really cool stuff. I don't think there's anything like that.
What are you talking about? We have the Department of Education, the Department of Agriculture.
But
we don't have the best thinkers in those organizations.
I don't know. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe there's any concentrated thing within government that says, hey, let's just get these people.
There's concentrated things outside of government
that
take money
tanks
and then
like
they
that.
Throw them at government, and they're called super PACs and they're
lobbyists.
And stuff lobbyists. And in most countries, that stuff is called corruption.
Yeah.
But here it's not. And I don't know. I mean, that's the game that we have here.
So I guess that's kind of what mixed mental arts could be.
It could be.
It's a group of people that are pretty open-minded, that are interested in bettering themselves and learning all different perspectives. Like, we had a very varied, what was there, 7 people there tonight. We had a pretty varied crowd.
It was good, man. It was fun.
Religious, different affiliations.
There's people that were really religious there?
And I don't think there was. I mean, I don't know.
I know we talked about religion, though.
There was a lot of ex-religious people.
I'm a fascinating person that I know, and we and I had this vast knowledge of their old faith, and I always like to test it and test my knowledge of their old faith.
Well, I think just even from interactions with other folks within mixed mental arts, and I think you have some spectrum of seekers. Someone across the spectrum. Kim Aries, the guy, he calls himself a fundamentalist Christian preacher. Remember, he's shown up there, which I think is amazing. One guy kind of just went right after him, which didn't seem awfully hospitable. I thought you should go, look, he knows.
It's just a different fundamentalism.
He knows he's
typically the fundamentalists go after each other.
Yeah.
But he knows he's kind of stepping into what is probably what might be slightly hostile territory. Can you cut the guy some slack, hear him out? Yeah. Some one, I can't remember who it was, kind of had a little bit more of an overt atheistic bent and just said, yeah, that's just bullshit, and what are you doing, and you know that, and it's kind of like, oh, just no, come on, just
atheists are the worst.
the militant atheists are ridiculous.
Proselytizing atheists are
the
worst.
That's it. And so
Penn Jillette says it straight out, like, I like proselytizing. I think Christians should be allowed to do that. It's their it's their freedom of speech. He's like, I like to do it as an atheist. And it's part of the reason I stopped listening to Penn. I like Penn, but I was just like, God.
Well, Penn's great, but I don't give a fuck about your religion. What's interesting, so talking to people who have been through faith transitions.
Yeah.
Maybe something I can relate to or not, but when it's been such that I can ask this kind of question, when they've gone straight to atheism, I've asked them, I said, are you open to the notion that you've just traded one
dogma,
one form of surety for a different, just for its, for its photo negative?
But I think that goes to everything, man. I think it's, man, I mean, I've been to so many group events. Like I went when I decided I was no longer libertarian, and I went to this anarchist conference, and it was the same thing. It was people had heard Stefan Molyneux and they'd listen to him and they found some freedom in what he had said. And they applied one little thing to what he was saying. And then it's like this, it's just like a different kind of cult effect. It's a different, you move from one group think to the other. You're chasing a different pasture. It's or a different shepherd. Yeah, it's a different form of tribalism. And it's like, even we went to, my buddy Nathan came down and a group of us, we went to Milo. We were going to go to the, like, we got these free tickets to see Milo when he was in at OSU. And again, we're sitting there. Everybody's just parroting stuff that I know they watched on YouTube. I know most of these people weren't reading books. Most of these people weren't developing their own opinions. It was like,
yeah,
this is a new popular contrary opinion or the new kind of cool opinion to have. And it's, and I've been there, so I think that's why I identify with it. But
okay, so I want to go on this. So yeah. this occurred to me, and this is not only because I'm a
That's what you got for petting mama. Now she's gonna get on your lap.
Coming over onto the lap. Holy smokes!
Yeah,
she just, yeah.
They're relentless, man.
It's the assumed clothes with these cats.
Yeah,
it's just, I like it. So that idea of just parroting and the kind of this absolute, that, like, this is it. So, like, this is the focus. But the parroting drives me nuts.
Yeah, because, you know, okay, I heard this person say that. You didn't reference them, and you clearly didn't put any more thought into it, but
you were looking
for a confirmation bias.
Yeah.
So I'm going to support an idea that you had, but you can't put your own words to it.
But what concerns me about that is, did you then not bother enough to do any more work so that then you could broaden out from that? And if you like that idea, great, but then go do some work.
Yeah, man.
And broaden out from it. And now that is not the only thing you can talk about, but that now is just kind of, that's part of the argument, or that something. And so what occurred to me years ago was different types of authority. And the type of authority I really struggle with is just kind of appointed authority.
Yeah.
That just comes from a title or something.
Yep.
I really have very little interest.
Somebody
that are
promoted in corporate America.
Yeah, I have very. I just I don't have much interest in that. Now, if they demonstrate to me that they've earned it and they really know their stuff, then I go, okay, that's cool. So earned authority from, like,
putting the work in.
I go, I dig that, and I'll spend all day asking that person questions, picking that person's brain, because I go, this is great, I can learn something, right? And then it occurred to me that the word author is an authority.
Yeah.
And I don't say that now just because I wrote a book, but what that to me means is, if you care enough about a particular area, you will take in what others are saying, but then you'll care enough about it that you'll actually want to bring something of your own to it.
Yeah.
And you'll take these influences, you'll give it some thought, you'll do some of your own work, and you'll try to bring some of your own unique contribution to it. So then when you bring something to it, it could just even be some, it doesn't have to be all that breakthrough or brilliant or original.
Yeah.
It just needs to show that you've actually processed it enough
Yeah.
That you're adding to it. You're making your contribution to it.
Yeah, that's what
and
makes
and so work. That kind of authority is kind of cool. And why aren't more people doing that?
I don't know, because that's what makes work fulfilling.
Yeah.
Like that's how you get fulfillment.
Absolutely. When you're actually creating because you've actually taken it in, you've internalized it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a weird thing even with podcasting and James, you haven't been podcasting as long as me, but you'll probably relate to this and you as an author because you've taken your own thoughts and you've put them out there. And once you put them out there, your view of those thoughts drastically changes. And so it's, you know, I had a, man, even just with the podcast, like it changes when I have a conversation with somebody, I might be really passionate about it. And then I go back and I listen to it. And I'm like, yeah, I like what I said there. And then a listener will ask me about it. And that same person that said what I said isn't the same person that's answering.
Hey, yeah.
Because it's like I put it out there to open a dialogue. Like I'm doing this to find my tribe. I mean, that's why you do stuff. I mean, that's why we got together. Because, I mean, like, look, we can shit on tribalism and we can say how annoying it is. But just like what you said with the negative feedback and how we resort to that. And this is why. Oh, yeah, man, you're going to keep pushing him off. Sorry, cats. I got guests here and the cats love my guests. But just like that, I mean, tribalism is just something that is a part of us. And it's
yeah, we're social creatures. We can't avoid it.
Yeah, and so, but I think it's just like anything, like, you know, people, you know, it gets annoying. Like, I remember when I was in multi-level marketing and I, you know, you hear false evidence appearing real. And it's like, no, like, that's dismissing what you're feeling.
Yeah.
And your feelings are there to tell you something. So you can either try to fight your natural instincts, or you can use them to your advantage, or you could use them to, yeah, this is what I naturally am. And it's just like whether you have a goal of losing weight, a goal of being successful, or a goal of anything, you have to think about what your goal is, how you're going to feel when you get there. Then you have to think about how you're going to feel if you don't do it. And a lot of times you have to use a mixture of both. Like, look, I want to feel like this, not this. So use that not this as a motivation to get to the way you want to feel.
Yeah.
And I think that's just it. I think it's you have to understand who you are, why you feel the way you feel, why you want what you want. And it's just kind of like, you know, we were there and I read this book, The Lean Farm, and he's a small scale farmer like me in Goshen, Indiana. And it's the same thing. He talks like the lean principle, ask why five times.
Yeah.
And it's like, and you get five different answers. And it's like, when he's hammering that in your head in the book, and I got to reread it, it's like, start doing that in your everyday life. Start doing that. And, you know, why do I drink coffee every morning? You know, why do I do this? Why do I do that? And then you actually ask those questions and you live in that question. And that's how you get growth. That's how you experience changes. That's how you start to randomly have people tag you on Facebook and say, hey, let's meet. Oh man, she really likes you. I mean, but yeah. That's it, because then you put yourself in this position to where here we are in a room and playing with my cats and having a conversation.
Well, we live in a time where we get to choose our tribe.
Yeah, man.
And we get to have our feet in many tribes at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, we're born into the tribe of American or Christian
individualism,
or Muslim, or they have the big tribe. And then you can get that down, and we're essentially kind of creating a tribe in this mixed mental art thing. So we can't shit all over tribalism for sure, but it's a fascinating time in that we're able to straddle, and you know, it's like going to the four corners out west where you can stand in four states at one time.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of where we're at. We get to stand in as many states as we want. We get to be a part of as many tribes as we want to, and we can decide that this one no longer serves me.
Yeah.
And I can walk away from that. And it doesn't mean I have to go hate that tribe that I was in before. No, just no. It was useful to me at one time, and now yeah. I can move on and do this other thing.
It's still fun to shit on it, though.
Well, know? Yeah. I just like shitting on stuff because anything for comedy. But.
Yeah, anything for a joke, man. But I think it's, you know, but it's like, I don't know, it's probably the contrarian in me, and I think that's why, like, I've really embraced the label of contrarian versus libertarian or anarchist or whatever it was before.
Well, here's what I need to challenge you.
Yeah.
So back to negativity bias.
Yeah.
So it's one of the cognitive biases. That's part of system one, the automatic fast thinking, right?
Yeah.
That's where all the cognitive biases are housed. And so the research shows that, and we all get that, it's automatic, it's reflexive, it's instinctual. Another part of the research is really interesting. It shows, hey, buddy, I like cat sneezes. That is so awesome. That's so cute. That's so adorable.
Oh, man, she's so spoiled. Look at her. It's disgusting.
The other part of this, then, that just demonstrates how entirely irrational we are, is that negativity appears profound.
Yeah.
And people who can most quickly and effectively eviscerate any new idea or new argument or new anything, any new presentation or whatever, get all kinds of smart points in a group. And we all know that there are people who have built entire careers on this. And of the few things I really want to make sure happen before I die, that's one thing I really want to make sure happens, is that stuff, is that shit gets called out.
Yeah, I think like, as a contrarian, I think it's important. Like, I would say I'm a realist.
Yeah.
A borderline idealist. Like, I think I'm pretty, like, I'm an all around positive guy, but if I call us, like, I'm not afraid to call out people's bullshit in the yard. Like, you know what I mean? And I think it's, if you like, I think that's why I like Scott Adams so much, even Hunter, because it's like trolling can be used to be thought provoking. It's not just shit posting and stupid memes. Like, that stuff gets annoying, but saying something provocative that stimulates conversation, that is a completely different thing. And I think if somebody is telling me how great Trump is, I'm going to put out counterpoints. If somebody's telling me how shitty Trump is, I'm going to put out counterpoints, because it's like, I think if you want to have a conversation, it's best to really try to address both sides, not just the positives and not just the negatives. You have to like have all the information, then make a decision.
And I want to know if people have considered both sides.
Yeah.
Like, I'm constantly somewhat trolling on my personal Facebook page
all the time,
where I will put, I'm thinking three moves ahead when I throw something up.
Yeah.
Because I know somebody's going to come at me from some angle, and like, I'm going to drop the other angle on them, and then I'm still ahead of you.
Now, here's my question. So do you think your audiences know?
Mine do.
What you're doing when you do that?
Oh, yeah. Mine does.
I mean, I do have people, I consider myself thought provoking, but I've had friends tell me that sometimes I'm just provoking.
Yeah,
I think that's just perception, because I'm I mean no malice.
Yeah,
unless somebody comes at me, then we're gonna have a problem. But I mean,
depends on if drugs are involved. I've had a few drinks. It's like, let me try to piss somebody off.
There's many variables.
I think I try to post less for that reason, because it's like, do I want to be known as the funny, thought provoking troll, or do I want to be known as the local food guy, small scale farmer, podcaster? And it's like, you know, it's good to choose hats. It's good to try to help manage. You can manage people's perception of you very easily.
And is it too much to be the funny, thought provoking, small scale?
I think that's what I'm trying for more. Like, I'm trying for that more, but it was like, it's like, if I get sick of shit, then I poke at it. And then I get sick of just the whole thing. I just try to be positive. And then if something just keeps coming in my direction, then I'm just like, man, I have to let this go. I have to address it and let it go. And then it's like, I have had friends that people that say how much they respect me, but they have to unfriend me because they just can't handle it. And it's like, okay, well, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. Like, I mean, one thing, I posted actually this meme that was kind of like, it was a view of the alt-right and the view of SJWs and how similar they are. Like, they're just different different forms of collectivism.
It's the horseshoe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it wasn't even, yeah, the horseshoe, but it's just like different forms of collectivism, right?
Yeah.
And I had one girl, and she was like, "Do you seriously believe that shit?" And I'm like, "Well, let's talk about it." And I messaged her, and I was like, "You know, why do you want to fight right now? Like, why are you like so quick to fight right now?" She's like, "Hell yeah, I want to fight." But I'm like, I was like, "Why?" And she couldn't tell me why. She just kept trying to fight me. And I said,
she was thinking fast.
Yeah. It's the same thing. Yeah.
It was the amygdala hijack. It was straight to the limbic
system. And that's like the culture. That's the culture we're in, especially when it comes to this whole pro-Trumper, anti-Trumper, anti-FIFA, whatever it is. It's like anybody that wants to get in the street and hold a sign and say, "This is who my guy is," or "This is what my ideology is," or "This is what," like, you're not going to make a difference doing that, man. If you want to make a difference, put your ideology in your own back pocket and go do it in the marketplace. I mean, like, look, if the guy that created Uber hated cabs so much that all he did was stand in the street and have a sign that said how much he hated cabs and talked about how corrupt the cabbie unions were and how the cities just catered to him and all that, would cabs be struggling today?
This is the my favorite quote from Michelangelo was criticized by creating.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's why I asked you earlier. Like, do you think you could have a bigger influence with innovation by being in politics or via business? Business.
Yeah, yeah.
Business. What do you feel?
Well, business, and we see it with lobbying.
Yeah.
The power comes from the billionaires that need to get shit done.
Yeah, but that's different. Lobbying is very different than what I'm talking about.
But
that's not
like the ultimate end to what we're talking about.
That's corporatism. Well, that's corporatism. That's a little bit different.
Well, the government only listens to large groups of people.
They do, the market
will have to be,
I mean,
led by
how much has the government tried to shut down things like Uber? Like, make it really hard for them. They've thrown a lot of bullshit at them.
Well, it's been the government as provoked by vested
the cab union, the cab lobby.
Yeah.
But then the market, the people that want to use Uber stand up and
automatically did it. Yeah, automatically. Like, that's the thing. Like, what Adam was saying earlier, it's like, you know, we can know, like, look, I obviously want to live a simple life. I mean, my furniture is very hipster because my grandpa got it for me forever ago. I bought this from my ex-girlfriend's mom. That's my only new shit right there. And that's a piece of shit, that little stand.
This is, should we describe what you're pointing to?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a shitty entertainment center. This shitty entertainment center that I hate fucking looking at. And it's cheaply made. And
it's
I paid way too much money for it.
Entertainment center.
It's a piece of shit. It's this pegboard bullshit you'd get from IKEA or something like that.
We've got, color-wise, we've got an Xbox as a highlight because it's the only thing that's white.
That's true. I am pretty good at matching.
I like it.
But like, so this is what I'm saying. Like, I want a simple life. I don't like ads. I use ad block. I don't like people having space in my head. I don't like a lot of that shit, right? Now, does that mean I'm not going to use it for... Am I not going to study that because I disagree with it or I don't like it invading my space? Am I not going to study that to make me more effective? That's silly. Like, sure. Of course I'm going to. It's pretty obvious. If you want to be successful in business these days, you just have to figure out a way to how to make anything convenient for the consumer. And they're going to take advantage of it. And you have to make something cool and convenient and easy so they don't have to mess with it. So people don't have to leave their houses. And it's that seems to be the winning thing, man. It's if you can provide convenience in whatever industry you're in, you're going to be ahead of the curve.
So while we're dropping these pearls of wisdom for your audience from the innovation guy.
That's you.
84% of all innovation success is attributed to uniqueness and relevance.
Yeah.
Right? It needs to be unique.
Yep.
It has to break out from the pack somehow. But if it's only unique and not relevant, that's kind of the area of, well, I'll try it, but then I don't need to try it again.
It's a good idea, but I just don't know what I'd use it for.
Yeah, I see no real role for
That's the kitchen gadget that does one thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of, you know.
It just does one thing better.
It's kind of interesting.
Was a tool for.
Particularly if it's like a consumable or something. That's the area of all trial. And
story of Febreze
and no
is fascinating.
Of what?
Febreze, the story in The Power of Habit. That was fascinating, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they thought they could market it to people because it would take the skunk smell out of the stuff. And then.
Yeah.
But it was like, nope, it's that extra thing that women do when they were cleaning the house. And that's what made Febreze.
Yeah.
Anyways, I didn't mean to direct, like, I didn't mean to railroad. I didn't mean to drew it up there.
No, that's good. So anyhow, that's it. Uniqueness, if you focus on uniqueness and relevance.
Yeah.
In what you bring out to the market, that's going to carry most of the weight. And then that's only 84%. You still have 16% to worry about.
Yeah.
That's all the other stuff. So it's not that all that other stuff doesn't matter. It's just that most of the heavy lifting is done by uniqueness and relevance.
So how do you think convenience adds into that?
Well, convenience, is massive in a lot of products and service categories is like the key driver of relevance.
Yeah.
If it's not convenience...
There'd be no Amazon if it
wasn't
convenient.
So here's a geeky factoid for you.
I love them, by the way.
Domino's pizza. Actually, their pizza is better now than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
They really, they learned some things. They thought, hey, let's quit selling cardboard.
But now they're redoing their whole front displays. They're redoing a lot of stuff.
But they're... But their month-on-month, same month last year, sales are up like 12%. And meanwhile, Pizza Hut down like 6%. Why?
Convenience. They got a phone app where you can order it and they deliver
it. Their app with the tracker and everything on delivery and everything. Is just kicking. So they made the investment in the app and in the IT and everything. And Pizza Hut did nothing. And Pizza Hut just kept competing on the regular, on the regular terms of competition. And Domino said, no, this whole app thing really matters. And look at the convenience there. Put together your easy order. They, through their analytics, they saw that most of the orders, there's a high degree of repeat order.
Yeah.
So they said, now just set up your order once. You can just hit one button. It's like Amazon.
That's what Uber Eats does.
It's like Amazon one click.
Well,
Uber Eats does the same thing. I don't know if you guys have Uber Eats where you're at in New Jersey.
No.
So you can literally, I'll pull it up right now.
But you can do the same thing, right? Just
it will tell me all my past orders.
Yeah.
Would you like to order this again?
Yeah,
sure.
Well, if you set up your order at Domino's,
yeah,
you can tweet at Domino's the pizza emoji, yeah, and that orders the pizza for you.
Yeah.
Like if you have everything linked together, all you have to do is go to Domino's at Domino's on Twitter, put your pizza emoji in, boom, 30 minutes later, there's a pizza at your door.
So look how they've now compare that to any other way of getting pizza to your home.
Awesome.
My ex-wife would not order from anywhere that didn't have online ordering because she didn't want to have to talk to anybody. She's a little anxious.
Yeah.
So when Domino's had was the first one out with online ordering, that's all we ate if we had pizza.
Donato's
has it, but
honestly, I don't remember the last time we got pizza from Pizza Hut, but I'm guessing Pizza Hut and Domino's pizza may be really comparable. I mean, I don't know.
Pizza used to be the best, but their quality went way downhill.
Well, they went to frozen dough.
They
making their own dough. They went.
But I'm saying overall,
he is the restaurant.
Overall, Domino's is not beating Pizza Hut because their pizza.
Well, it's not about quality.
Yeah, it's all about now because I have one click easy order, or now I can just put in a pizza emoji on Twitter and I have my order. So, very long-winded way of saying how important is convenience? How big of a driver is it in the relevance equation? Massive.
Yeah.
And that's driven by technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so just like...
Convenience is a technology.
Well,
the base of all technology.
And convenience...
Yeah.
Convenience is, in many product categories, the master benefit, right? But there are different types of convenience and new ways of really making that happen. So
yeah,
always be thinking, how can I do that? And the moment you're thinking about doing it the same way that your competition is doing it, then again, you're losing on uniqueness.
Yeah, you don't.
So, you know.
I mean, that's.
You've always got to be thinking.
That's the issue that I have.
Where everyone else is zigging.
Small-scale farmers.
Where everyone else is zigging, how can I zag?
Yeah. No, I agree, man. You got to blaze your own trail. Like, I think that's so what's so cool about small-scale farming is everybody is trying to figure out, because we all use hand tools, they're trying to figure out how can we automize, how can we automize, not automize, like how can we make everything for fall? everybody's thinking, how can I make this process faster?
Yeah.
How can I take this and make this, how can I make it so one person can wash and dry 100 pounds of greens in an hour on his own? And it's all, so, I mean, you see people that, they retrofit washing machines and they turn them into green spinners. So you wash the greens and then you stick them in this little tub and then you turn it on and it just, you put it on a spin cycle and it spins all the water and then it's like, it's good. And then
that
you see.
So cool.
Yeah. My friend Curtis and actually JM, Jean Martin Fortier, he's got like this mega small scale farmer. It's just all about innovation that some guy's putting a lot of money behind, but they have this idea where they took a PVC pipe and then to wash your greens so you don't have to take them and dip them and then dip them and then take a salad spinner and with a handle and spin them. So you could take, like, there's just a tote and there's a PVC pipe. You take a jacuzzi bubbler, like a jacuzzi pump, and you hook it on there. You put it in water and then it's just a bubbler. And then it gets all the slugs and all the bugs off. And then you take that out, you stick it in that automized thing, you turn that on, you take the next set of greens, and it's like, so making, so you do take, you take things from the factory and you take things from like the old world that really no longer exists, and then you apply it on a small scale level. And I think that's what's so excited about small scale farming is the innovation, man. I mean, it's like you know, maximizing your space, maximizing getting the most dollars out of your space, your efforts, and everything else like that. I think that's why I'm here. I mean, that's why I'm in this space, because it's,
I love it.
It's exciting for me, because otherwise I just get bored.
another term for you. You got me thinking of, you know what? So everybody knows what adaptation is. You know what exaptation is?
No.
Have you ever heard that?
No.
So what were feathers for originally in birds? It wasn't for flight.
Swimming?
No, it's for heat dispersion.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
It's for heat dispersion. And then only after that evolved, and then how, you know, the first bird who actually then figured out that feathers actually help with loft and flight and everything. I don't know exactly how that worked out. But that's an example of something that evolved for one reason. It was then found a second use for something else that's actually better known for now, or that second use. But for something that wasn't originally, for which it wasn't originally evolved.
So it's an unintended adaptation.
And then, thank you. He said that much better. I had to do the very long
one. He is one of the coolest humans on the planet.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's very nicely done.
That's my guess, not me.
But but I just want to plant that seed
for you.
So how can you exapt other things now for your thinking? So when you see other things go, how can I use that here? How can I use that here? How can I use that here? And a lot of the history of innovation is exaptation.
Yeah.
You know. Stephen Johnson, who wrote Where Good Ideas Come From, that's the first time I saw the term exaptation. But he just wrote his most recent book. It's called Wonderland, which talks about how a lot of the breakthroughs for stuff that really matters to us now came from toys, games, frivolous stuff. But it's just like paying attention and going, it gets me thinking, you know, and then. So whenever we just dismiss all this frivolous stuff throughout history, no, that frivolous stuff has actually ended up being pretty important. You know, robotics and everything first started as like just little oddities, and you know, robots in the 1800s, you know, the you know, some of those things that you'd go, these oddities that you'd go see in
more for entertainment.
Yeah, more for entertainment.
Oh yeah, it was like the World's Fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, even before that, I mean, the World's Fair was just kind of some of the stuff, the, you know, these curiosities that brought up to a much grander scale that would be in cities, you know, kind of throughout the world. And it was just strictly for fun, strictly for entertainment. Yeah. I don't know if you ever saw the Scorsese film that was based on the kids' book, Hugo.
Hugo's great.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
Love that.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But you know, some of the machines, you know, some of those robots and everything.
Same thing. Yeah. That makes
sense.
Same
thing. But really a lot of that early learning and everything came just again through these little frivolities.
And what's interesting too is like talking to Mike McAllowitz, your fellow New Jerseyite, you know, with Profit First and his whole system, the cool thing about that is, you know, when you make your business and it's like, nope, it can only run on 30%. You're not getting loans. You're not doing that. You quickly think differently.
You have to.
Yeah, you have to. And I think that's what's like cool with, that's another thing I like about, you know, homesteading. And we like to use the term hillbilly ingenuity. And because it's like you look at things from a way more practical approach. And it's like, well, this is what I have. So this is what I have to make work. And even, you know, Mike was telling me with his leather company, they had to get something in leather that was really expensive. Like the normal way that you basically do this process for leather. And they're like, well, we don't have the income to justify the purchase even. So, and then they just went to Home Depot and they were trying different things from ship from Home Depot, found this process that he couldn't share because now it's proprietary. And now they can do the same thing with leather at a way cheaper cost. And
brilliant.
Yeah. So instead of, you know, going to the bank and getting loans and setting your company up to fail pretty much, they now are way ahead of the game because it's like, well, what, you know, we have to bootstrap it. So let's bootstrap it and let's make shit work. Yeah. And I think that's the exciting thing. It was interesting. We were having the conversation earlier and I go over I go back and forth. I know it's getting late, so we probably want to wrap it up here. But I go back and forth with automation and everything. And it's like, I don't see the image. Who was it? Was it Keynesian image of automation and people don't have to work anymore and we'll all just have robots and everything? I don't see that being the case, but I do see the case of multiple small enterprises and things being way more affordable for a smaller guy to do because of technology like 3D printing,
right,
and stuff like that versus, you know, oh, well, I have to have this factory. We have to have this huge fabrication machine and all that. So I see innovations like that definitely taking place. So I think the economy is going to shake up. I mean, I think shit is going to get worse, but then it is going to, I think it's just going to go to what the real economy is and it's going to adjust personally.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that notion.
Yeah, because I don't think shit has to get fucked up because of the amount of financial heroin in the system. Like, it's not going to just get fixed. Like, you can't just fix that. Yeah, like,
there has to be a crash and a withdrawal.
There has to be a crash and a withdrawal. And it's like, but what can you do to, I mean, that's why I bought my house. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm like at this low, just trying to small scale my life. So it's affordable. If I need to make my money delivering food for Skip the Dishes and setting a schedule, doing that on a 1099, I'll do it. You know, then it's like, I don't have kids, so I don't worry about health insurance or anything like that. And there's no more Obamacare. And no, I mean, the penalty is not necessarily there right now.
Thanks,
supposedly.
Obama.
Thanks, Obama. So, I mean, we'll just see. But yeah, I think we probably going to wrap it up because it's getting late and we've been going for an hour and 5 minutes. So
it's been fun.
Yeah, man, it's been a blast. James, how can people check you out and check out your work?
It's The Coolest Humans on all the socials, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And I talked about on my personal page that I like to be provoking and that kind of stuff. On The Coolest Humans pages,
It's all positive, love, peace, hippie shit. Like, for real, I love just, I get up every morning and I go find cool people doing cool shit. And I post that stuff on all my different social things. I retweet cool, positive people. It's going to look like some Tony Robbins on mushrooms type stuff.
Nice.
If you go check it out. Like, I just want to be the bright spot in somebody's day.
Yeah.
I try to find the coolest people for my show. I found this guy from Finland who founded the World Wingsuit League. And he learned how to jump out of a plane because he was a professional magician and he wanted to do some Houdini shit jumping out of a plane. So he did one parachute thing to do a trick and then started the World Wingsuit League where they race each other in those wingsuits. You know, I got a hold of that guy, got him on there. I got a guy that ran 100 marathons in 100 days. I talked to Rob Wolf today. I'm talking to you guys. This is going to go.
Wow.
Like, I go out and find cool people that are doing cool shit that are inspiring. I had no idea that Eero Seppänen, the guy from the World Wingsuit League, was going to be an inspiring podcast. He only gave me 30 minutes, but there is just a ton of inspiration from what he went through to do what he did and the commitment he had as a child to learn shit. So if you're into turning the thing on and being inspired or having your thoughts challenged or that kind of stuff, check out the podcast and hit me up on all the social stuff. I just love doing it, and I want more people to find my stuff.
That's great. That's awesome, man. I like what you're doing, man. It's a very similar approach to why I got started, and it's great. I'll definitely have to check out your show. Adam, the man with the plan who got us all together tonight, how can people follow your work? How can people get in touch with you and pick your brain? How can people book you to innovate for them?
Tell people about your book, too.
So hit Amazon. The book is called Outsmart Your Instincts. Stinks. I have to overpronounce that.
There'll be a link on in the show notes.
Yeah. Subtitle is called How the Behavioral Innovation Approach Drives Your Company Forward. It's about 8 cognitive biases that are tripping up innovation and what you can do about them. Sounds really geeky. We've actually heard from artists, from people, lawyers, engineers, everything saying, hey, I'm glad I read it. I didn't know for sure if it applied to me as well. And guess what? It does. So we're happy to hear that beyond just our immediate client base, other people are finding some real value in it as well. It was fun to write it. We just really enjoyed putting it all together. We're at Ideas to Go. I'm one of the partners there. www.ideastogo.com. It's spelled out. There's no numeral 2 for 2 in Ideas to Go, so it's TOGO.
I'm glad that you guys
have to say that
because correct.
We get asked that all the time.
Is it like 2?
Is it 2? No, TOGO. It's Togo.
The correct.
If we ever expand to the African country of Togo, we're already set. Ideas Togo.
I didn't know there's a country called Togo.
That's right. On Twitter, I'm Ad Hansen because Adam Hansen was already taken by some guy here in Cleveland, I think.
That dick.
So Adam Hansen was already taken. So I'm just Ad Hansen, A-D-H-A-N-S-E-N.
I can't get James Miller on
Ad. On Twitter. Well, James Miller. I mean, yeah, but.
I nailed down Drew Sample before that shitty tight end at the University of Washington.
Oh, check. Yeah, but how many Adam Hansens are? You know the answer? I actually founded a Facebook group.
Too.
No, I founded a Facebook group because it just cracked me up. I thought it was just funny conceptually. I started a Facebook group called I Am Adam Hansen. And I think there are like six.
Started inviting people?
There are like 16 of us. And I, of course, I'm the oldest one.
But, nice. So you're the first.
Yeah, I'm the first. But yeah, so I'm happy to talk. I'm an innovation geek. I've been doing it for about 30 years. I love it. I feel very fortunate to be able to do it for a living. So hit me if you have any questions about the book or you just want to talk about innovation or, you know, whatever.
Great. Well, hey, guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode and looking forward to bringing another one soon.